So boring, Bruce.
It's, well, the new news is...
Guess what? The debt's big. Okay, shocker.
And it's going to be even bigger.
Big debt.
Mr. Speaker!
You're at the intersection of business and politics. This is the 14th and G podcast from Milman Consulting. Now, here's our host, Dean Hinkson.
Well, despite your best intentions, you have once again set your podcast dial at the intersection of business and politics, the 14th and G podcast with me, your host, Dean Hinkson, and my erstwhile boon companions here at the firm, Republican Bruce Milman and Democrat David Thomas. Gentlemen, welcome to 14th and G.
Thank you, Dean.
Thanks for having us back.
Well, it's hot. It's hot, hot, hot. It's hot outside.
Damn hot.
Hot. How hot hill. Is it?
That's a great question. It's going to get hotter this weekend. And
dome.
The heat dome over the Northeast and the Midwest. And then scorching hot at the first presidential debate. We're 1 week out. Trump versus Biden.
Because the guys are going to set the thermostat up really high? Because it feels on brand for the debate.
It'll be like being in my parents' house. 78-80 is a perfectly reasonable temperature for the thermostat.
Seinfeld nailed that one.
Yeah. Well, I think I saw President Biden is off to Camp David for debate prep. One guy's not going to, you know, Trump's not going to show. Biden's not going to show. They're both running scared. One or the other got the advantage in the sort of the pre-debate debate. But
RFK's in, RFK's out.
Everybody knows what the expectations are. I mean, can Trump keep a leash on himself and present himself as reasonable in this sort of representation to the American electorate?
I'll take the under on that one.
Will Biden be able to stand for the entire time and articulate a sentence? I don't know. What do you guys think?
Boy, I have a lot of thoughts on this here, Dean. So, number one, I think it's important to look at this debate is going to be a little different than the debates that we've been used to, both in the primaries and in previous years here. Number one, no audience. That takes a lot of the cheering and the hooting and the hollering and it turning into a Jerry Springer episode out of the picture. It is just going to be the two candidates and the moderators. And let's see, it's Dana Bash and Jake Tapper. And then on top of that, apparently to control President Trump, they're going to turn off the microphones when you're not supposed to be talking. Now, I don't know how strong these mics are, whether other mics will pick him up when he inevitably will keep talking. But I guess the Biden people considered it a big win to get a debate agreed to on these with these ground rules here. I'm not sure Donald Trump's going to stick to ground rules no matter what, but at least it's going to feel a little different than past debates.
President Trump, known for his ability to speak from the diaphragm and may not need a microphone.
Look, I think this is going to be a nothing burger of a debate. That's my baseline expectation. First, because the expectations, to your point in the intro there, Dean, are so way too epic. You know, if Trump doesn't dive across the chasm between the two and start, you know, swinging, if he's just a normal, doesn't go crazy thing, well, that's not what we were told to expect. And likewise, if Biden can remember his name, if he can form a sentence, well, we saw at the State of the Union, well rested, he'll be just fine. So first, I think expectations are too epic for what I expect. Two, the rules, like DT said, I mean, it's going to feel sterile. It's going to feel like 1950s, which maybe is fitting given the nominees, but it's like
the kitchen debate.
Well, yeah, but it'll be, you know, calm and polite and you get it. I'm not sure that I like the audience's booing and all, but we've all in the last 20 years gotten conditioned to a level of energy that just won't be here, you know. And then number three, so many historical debates to me were important because you didn't know the guys. So you didn't quite know what to expect, you know, whether it's your old buddy Al Gore kind of crowding Bush and his funny physical reaction to that thing or, you know, or Reagan promising to not take advantage of his candidate's youth and inexperience with Mondale, which was, you know, one punch and done in that debate. Obama, you know, you're plenty likable Hillary. It's This is warmed over pudding, and we know what we're going to get, and so there'll be no surprises in a sterile format where if something epic doesn't happen, we're going to be disappointed. That just sets up to me to be a nothing burger.
I don't like the phrase warmed over pudding.
What President Biden has for dinner. Is this Jeopardy? Oh, sorry.
So adding on your point there, because I agree with a lot of what you said there, I don't think there's one person in the country who is undecided at this point. Like we really have two incumbents running for re-election is what this feels like. Something that we really haven't had before. You got to go back, all the way to Theodore Roosevelt and William Howard Taft to have two former presidents sort of slugging it out. So nobody's undecided. I also think that in the era of social media, I wonder how many people are actually going to watch this debate sitting down like we will to watch the full 90 minutes versus how many Americans within the 24 to 48 hours afterwards are going to see the little snippets from each individual campaign that will all be undoubtedly incredibly negative, snarky, and that will just reinforce the beliefs that everybody has on the candidate that they don't like.
I'm going to disagree with you slightly because I don't think – there aren't undecideds, or at least aren't people who haven't decided how they're actually going to vote. I think the so-called double haters who are decided they don't like either of these guys, I think to a significant degree, they go back and forth between why they're not going to vote for Trump and why they're not going to vote for Biden. And I think if the debate isn't sterile, if it leads to an unexpected moment, I think there are a lot of people who genuinely feel like it. Choice A sucks and choice B sucks, and they haven't decided which sucks less. Yeah,
I think if it's choice A sucks and choice B sucks, they stay home.
Maybe.
And it's going to be who can get their supporters more motivated
that's
to go out and
exactly
vote.
That's exactly right, DT. That's where I think these guys are coming from. That's why I think this is going to be, this is going to be full of personal insults. It's about each of these guys sort of giving vent to their base's frustration and really outright hatred of the other side. So I think it's going to be particularly nasty. I think these guys all have their little digs on age, on criminal conviction. They've got all those sort of things sort of set to try to. I think it's more about juicing their base than it is about swaying undecideds. And coming into this is the state of play that these guys are walking into, and it is C-L-O-S-E, close. Nate Silver's got the polling average right now at Trump 41.9, Biden 41.2. Biden got an 0.8% bump since the verdict in President Trump's New York trial. Fox has it a little bit different. Fox has Biden up 50, Trump 48. But if you look at the crosstabs on the Fox poll, Trump has 27% of black voters. There's something going on here in the demographics.
Yeah, look, we've had folks on Zooms with books about this thing. Whether there is a realignment that's going to be durable or not, the polling of the last 6 to 12 months overwhelmingly suggests that we are amidst a realignment where working class voters multiracially are unhappy with a Democratic Party they think is too progressive on a variety of issues that they don't think matter as much to them as inflation and the border. And, it's they don't want to get into a big debate about who should be allowed to compete in what sports. They don't want to talk about climate. They want to talk about the affordability of the things they're buying in the grocery store.
So, Bruce, what you're advocating here, maybe not advocating or just suggesting, is Teamsters for Trump and congressional country club members for Biden. Is that what we're going for here?
I think the Democrats run a very significant risk of going from the factory line to the faculty lounge. And Biden was the right nominee to avoid that. But the agenda he came in with, having run as kind of a moderate, calm things down guy, he then met with all the historians and said he wanted to be consequential. To his credit, he's been really consequential in a lot of the things that have passed. But so many of the people he's picked and the policies he's pursued have been far more a reflection of the Biden-Sanders fusion agenda than an agenda worrying about holding the line with working class voters. And I think those Chickens may come home to roost.
I think that's a bunch of nonsense. Or malarkey.
Malarkey.
As somebody I heard once say here. I think that Biden's has an incredible record to run on here. The amount of really fundamental key legislative priorities he got done in the first 2 years was stunning, and he's continuing to do it in a divided Congress here. And again, I know I'm like a broken record on this, but if you think about where he came in with 4 years ago, with incredibly uncertainty, an insurrection at the Capitol in the middle of a pandemic, and what has he done? He's calmed things down. And we've got, yes, was there inflation? Yes. It's also come down here. He's got the economy moving again. He's made a record number of jobs across the country. We believe in NATO again, which we didn't for the previous 4 years. We're working with our allies and not our enemies. Like, this is a record that should be enviable. And I'm hoping that he will convey that and that the White House will continue to convey that to Americans across the country, because I actually think he's got a great record to run on.
Well, no doubt about it. The guy has gotten billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars out the door, but tens of billions of dollars spent on rail and very little built. Tens of billions of dollars of report out this week on rural broadband, and tens of billions of dollars in 3 years and no homes connected to rural broadband. That's the problem with these massive government programs, is it is so hard to get the money where it's supposed to go and actually affect the outcome.
Well, you're right, although to be fair, that's probably less a – many of those are not a reflection per se on the Biden administration, but rather on all of the various levers and tools by which environmental groups or others can block investment, can block spending. We're worried about China and semiconductors. So we had the CHIPS legislation, bipartisan, a really big deal. Very little of that money has gotten out the door. Why are they not breaking ground in upstate New York right now? Endangered bats. And they've got to wait for the bats to change whatever cave they live in to go hibernate somewhere. And then they've got to come up with the destination. To be fair to Commerce Secretary Raimondo, she led an effort to get Congress to ease the environmental regulatory morass, blocked by Republicans, to give her credit. But DT, where I want to go back is, I said there is a substantial legislative agenda. The question is whether Biden's meaningful, legit legislative accomplishments reflect a moderate president or a president who's gone really big but often very progressive. And I think everybody wants it both ways, what the Dems are trying to say to the progressive base that's particularly unhappy because there wasn't enough student loan debt relief, they're worried about Gaza, is look how progressive this guy is. We're not going to export LNG. And they go through a lot of other things. And it's always the challenge of, if you want to have it both ways, the more you scratch the itch for the progressive energetic base, which you need, the more you turn off the working class voters. And the more you go down to the middle, the more you run the risk of progressives not turning out or going third party.
I don't want to have it both ways. Like, do you want competent leadership with people who believe in the role that government plays in our society, or do you want chaos? There's your election right there. I am hoping that 50.001% of Americans will want competent leadership going forward for the rest of the 21st century here. But boy, it's going to be close. And I hope we don't end up with another 4 years of chaos, because our system has been resilient. I don't know how much more it could take.
Well, let's look ahead, speaking of what's coming, because we know a couple of things that are going to be on the docket very early in 2025. Whoever holds the White House, whoever runs the Senate, whoever runs the House, we're going to have a big tax year. We've got a lot of tax policy expiring. That's going to have to be redone. If it's President Trump in the White House with the Congress, I think plans for that reconciliation bill are already being made. And then trade and tariffs. That may be somewhat business as usual in a Biden 2 administration, but that looks to be ramped up if it's Trump in the White House. We get getting a lot of these questions already in the summer as clients are doing scenario planning on those two big pieces.
Yeah, boy, 2025 is going to be an incredibly consequential year from a policy standpoint. And you've hit on two of the bigger ones right there, trade and tax. And if you are waiting until January to get started on this process because you want to see how the elections turn out, you will be too late. The tax writing committees, Senate Finance, House Ways and Means Committee. They are already working on their legislative proposals for the coming year, working with their members to figure out where are the priorities, what do they want to get done, what are the things that they have to get done. Let's look at those extenders that haven't been passed for the past couple of years, because those are in the mix as well. Trump's tax cuts, ACA tax cuts, there's a lot on the table here. And so, you know, I know just speaking from my own conversations with clients, I think that the smart politically savvy folks are already thinking about what do they want to get done, because we got to start talking to people now.
Well, look, I'll totally agree and add on, DT. I mean, we've been in business for a little over 20 years. I've never had this much interest this early on in trying to think about, well, who's going to be in charge? What are the policies they're going to pursue? You know, who are the allies that we're going to want to have? What's so fascinating is after a very accomplished 117th Congress, the 118th is not going to be known for passing lots of legislation. In fact, to date, they've passed 65 total bills, which is probably the fewest public laws enacted by a Congress at this point since they wore powdered wigs. Now, more laws passed does not a better Congress make, but come on, fellas, this one's a bit of a struggle. And yet, rather than dialing it back, so many of the folks that we are working with will give you the call and say, come help us do the scenario planning. Who do we need to know? Not least because not only is the presidential campaign too close to call, but the odds of the first in American history double flip are pretty substantial. The Senate feels more likely to flip than not, and the House is too close to call.
And speaking of Congress, we've got a few, we've got more left. We're sort of rocketing here towards the August break. Congress is, the interesting thing I think is House and Senate are really sort of out of phase here over the last 6 weeks of this work period. They're not both in at the same time, but appropriations, you've got that rocking and rolling. The House is batting 1,000 on appropriations bills. National Defense Authorization, NDAA, which we spend a lot of time working on. Those both seem, though, to be headed towards final resolution in the lame duck session post-election. We've got a privacy bill, a deal announced just today between the ENC chair, Kathy McMorris Rogers, and ranking Democrat Frank Pallone. They're going to try to move something here in the committee, but doesn't sound like it has legs.
Well, I think you hit a lot of the things that we're going to see between now and at least the start of the August recess, Dean. I actually did a count today, 16 days that the House and Senate will be in session between now and the start of the August recess. Many of those are fly-in days, so not heavy legislative work. So we've got very few days left here. I do think the House will get a few more appropriation bills done. They've got on tap the Senate foreign ops bill next week. They've got the DHS bill, possibly DOD appropriations. But I'm not sure how many more after that are going to get done. The other issues that could come up in the House if we do sort of move away from appropriations are, do we have the much anticipated China week or the much anticipated woke week? Right now, what we hear is that those are not ready for action because the bills aren't ready. There's not consensus. But look, Speaker's got to put something on the floor at some point. So I could see that coming back to life in July.
Do these theme weeks ever come to fruition? Remember Infrastructure Week and the Trump administration was just a sort of...
Every week was Infrastructure Week.
It's like a monthly joke. But these...
Who got that infrastructure bill done finally? Oh, the silence is deafening in
theme
this room
weeks,
here.
Theme weeks.
Chuck Schumer.
he'd agree with you on that. You know, so you've got those big... But I agree with you, appropriations. Likely gets punted past September 30th. NDAA gets done in a lame duck that will really, again, tee it up for a very busy and robust 2025 that everybody should be thinking about now.
Yeah, I mean, we break, we're inside of 30 days to the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. Democrats will have their convention.
It's a wonderful city, from what I hear.
Wonderful city.
That's right.
That's what all the billboards say, DT. Wonderful city, Milwaukee. And then the Democrats will have their convention in August in Chicago. I don't know if we expect anything out of these conventions. Seem so anachronistic, just sort of out of place in time.
Well, you say, I mean, at least on the Republican side, the reveal.
Yeah, well, the VP. Right.
Right. Right. That's actually, there's a little bit of suspense on that whole thing.
J.D. Vance, Senator Vance from Ohio, seems to be the be the sort of the inside favorite here.
He seems strong. I'm told that Senator Rubio will be coming to Milwaukee in a U-Haul. So he's prepared to relocate instantly to a swing state.
Yeah, you can't have two. You can't have two president, vice president from the same state under the Constitution.
It sounds like if you do it, you don't get the Electoral College votes from that state, which is not good if it's going to be this close.
One more item for litigation. Sure.
I'm Why still. Well, by the way, my call remains 269-269. That's my Electoral College call.
God help us.
Is that with the Nebraska second?
If Nebraska 2 goes back to Republicans and Biden manages to find a way to hold Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan, where he has been consistently trailing, but by narrower and narrower amounts. So the Great Lakes hold, but Arizona and Nevada and Georgia all go back to Trump. That's not a crazy scenario, although the 538 model gives me 4 out of 100 chance, and the Economist model gives me a 1 out of 100 chance, so I'm saying there's a chance.
What does the Economist know about American politics? Well, why don't we close out here on a matter of existential crisis? Bruce, I'm a devoted follower of your Twitter X feed, and you tweeted out this...
I knew there was somebody.
You tweeted out this CBO report, which got some play this week on the state of America's national debt. We're over $30 trillion at this point, right?
Headed Where towards, you been, man?
Headed towards 50, I think they said. They really upped the...
We're nearing 35. Yes. By 2034, it'll be $50 trillion. This year, when I think we can all agree it's fundamentally peace and prosperity, I mean, Bidenomics has led to extraordinary economic growth, it's going to be a $2 trillion debt. Now, to be bipartisan DT about it, Trump, who, according to Trump in 2019, presided over the greatest economy in the history of humanity, if not intergalactic greatest economy of all time, he was running $1 trillion a year, too, in even more peaceful times and prosperity. There is no obvious exit ramp. We're just going to keep putting it on the kids' credit card until such time as we can't get people to buy treasury debt. And then a great reset is going to land like a zillion trillion tons of bricks. God knows when it'll be, because I've been calling a debt crisis since the Reagan administration, so I don't know what I'm talking about. But it just cannot go on like this forever. And yet neither of these guys plans to do the multi-trillion dollar surgery that's really unpopular but required.
But I would submit to you, there is no functional... What is the functional difference between $35 trillion in debt and $50 trillion in debt? It is a number so far over the rainbow of practical application, it's almost meaningless.
Well,
It makes you want to be a modern monetary theorist.
I mean, here's
equals assets.
Here's the main difference. Interest. You got to pay interest on the debt. Interest next year will meaningfully exceed our spend on defense, and it will continue going forward. You can't not pay off your debt. So while I'm with you, 35 seems existential. 50, your point is, well, is it, you know, double existential? It's bad, but we're at the point now where interest will eat so much of our spend that's just going to force you to have to cut elsewhere or just keep growing it and figure maybe it'll never
Crank up the printing press. Just crank it up.
Wasn't it Dick Cheney that said deficits don't matter?
He did.
That was Cheney.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. So there's your answer, Dean, right there.
Well, the original modern monetary theorist.
I believe he also said duck, and his friend didn't listen to that either.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast, brought to you by the lobbying firm of Melman Consulting. For more, just type 14th and G podcast into your favorite search engine, or look for 14th and G wherever you get your podcasts, and subscribe.
Beam me up, Mr. Speaker.